Hello and welcome to We Will Rank You, the greatest podcasts in the British Empire, I guess, is a good history. Thing to say tonight. We've got our usual cast of characters. Dan, are you in Oakland tonight?
I am, and you said in the British Empire, but I believe we're number 11 in Norway, is it?
Finland.
Oh, Finland. Right. Under the
country
music,
where I want to be.
The music commentary section charts. Apparently we're trending in Finland. Do what you want with that information. Jim,
shout
are you still in the 805 area code?
Yes, I am.
Nice. And Sam, is it 303 out there?
303, represent.
Nice. Well, we made it to 10 episodes, guys. It's our double-digit 10th episode.
Oh, and, I didn't get you guys anything. I'm sorry. I had no idea.
What is 10? Is it vinyl or is it a cassette? 8-track?
Jeez. I think it's dairy products.
So we've been saying that for our 10th episode, we are going to have you guys choose what we rank. And so what we did is we took the request that we have received. We didn't ask for requests, but because of the way music people are, you know we're going to get some you know what you should do's. And sure enough, we got one guy who sent us 30 requests and about 10 other people who sent us requests. So the four of us being experts whittled that down to 6 nominees. You guys voted on it. And the winner that came out on top was Blur's Park Life.
Excellent.
So we were pretty happy with that decision.
Overall.
Jim and I both picked that as our number one. So we totally approve of that. So thanks to Molly, who is a friend of mine in Boston, for suggesting that we do Blur. She didn't tell us what album that she wanted us to do. But we chose Park Life kind of collectively through a rigorous process. So that is what we're going to be talking about tonight. So before we get into the actual album, we're going to talk a little bit about how much we like this band. So we're going to start with Jim on that.
Oh my God.
Boy, here we go.
I loved Leisure. I loved Modern Life is Rubbish. And then I'll talk about why I gave this album a swerve. It was only after I heard The Great Escape that I went back to Park Life. And so we'll talk about that. But I am definitely a Blur fan.
Okay. And with that said, Dan, why don't you tell us a little bit about it? Dan was sort of the wild card because... I already knew Jim likes Blur, and I already know Sam likes Blur.
I'm the wild card. Blur for me has always been that person that you dated for a while and you had a really good time with them, but you just couldn't end up falling in love. Molly, don't
second.
Hold this against me.
Someone just showed up on our Zoom.
What?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I don't even know. Did someone give this address out?
Someone crashed our Zoom. Like, what? I don't even...
That's amazing.
This is
I assume
weird.
This is the Molly, but if not, it's just a weird coincidence that it's another Molly.
It's Anne.
Hi.
Molly.
Hey,
yeah,
Molly.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Molly, thank you so much for your amazing choice that we approved, and then the general public, it rose to the top thanks to you.
I've never felt more proud. Honestly, truly.
Well, that's unfortunately really sad for you, Molly, but we're happy to have you nonetheless.
Thanks. Thank you.
Democracy works. Democracy works. So, yes. So quick question, why did you ask us to do Blur of all bands?
Well, so that album, the Park Life album, was kind of like my first album that I got into, like that wasn't my parents' music.
That's cool.
I used to live in England and I moved when I was 10. And then Park Life came out when I was 11. So that was my sort of entree into like cool music beyond my parents' library. But,
that's a good one.
And I listened to it on cassette tape on repeat for like an entire year. And, I don't know. After hearing your takes, I just thought maybe this is one that they can cover too.
Excellent. Yeah. You thought right. Well, we're right about to dig in, and I know it's past your bedtime out in Boston, so thanks for staying up late. Say hi to Philip and the kid, and we'll try and do you justice.
Okay.
We don't get to hear her top song.
Oh, do you have an opinion, Molly? I don't.
Before I go, End of a Century.
All right.
Nice one.
Nice.
All right.
Bye.
See you later. Thanks a lot.
Molly.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Nice
Bye.
To meet you.
Uh-huh.
Wow, look at that.
Perfect
that was
timing.
Fun.
Starting to drop in.
I know. A little technology for you. Okay, go ahead, Dan. What were you saying?
So I was saying Blur is the girl that I dated. We had a great time, but I just never fell in love. I just couldn't find myself fully committing. I owned their self-titled album, which I think is their first, right?
No.
Somehow it, what? No?
No, it's the
keep
their
moving,
fourth.
Keep moving All right.
See, I'm not, the one with the, no, sorry, not that one. I. What's the one of the woman with the swim cap? What's that
Leisure.
One?
That's the first album. That's what I did.
Oh, that's Leisure. Okay. See,
Leisure.
Good thing I didn't bill myself as a Blur fan. I owned that, and I did own the self-titled. And then I somewhere along the way, I picked up the greatest hits, which I don't think I listened to as much as I should have. So, excitingly enough, this was my first time really tackling Park Life. So, thanks for giving me a 16-track album to learn quickly. That was a little brutal. I'm tired from the last few weeks. And I will let you know how my relationship with Blur has evolved when we get into the countdown.
Nice. All right. Sam?
I mean, I knew of the band. I was working in college radio, so I knew the band from There's No Other Way. It was definitely kind of that Madchester sort of sound, that kind of like swirly, psychedelic sort of thing. And they played the Open Air Theater, or no, the Back Door. I think they played the Back Door, and a friend of mine was working there and got me a signed poster, which I forgot to dig out, but he had them all sign it and whatever and gave it to me. I'm like, oh, this is really cool, but I didn't really know them. I mostly got into them with Park Life and then a little bit after, but kind of like Dan, never like one of my favorite bands. It was, you know, like Oasis and Blur, and for some reason I just kind of tipped on the Oasis side. So
you chose wrong.
I was wondering how long into this podcast it would be before we talked about Oasis versus Blur.
I'm sure we're going to have to get there.
Please, no.
Well, I'm very happy with this vote because I would say that this is my favorite band that we've covered so far. And I was curious if maybe I've seen them more than any of us have seen any band that we've covered, which is why I messaged Dan and Sam on the side to see how many times they had seen Depeche Mode and The Cure. It sounds like Dan maybe as high as 7 or 8 for Depeche Mode. I've seen Blur 7 times, so they are one of my favorites, which is interesting because Jim chose my favorite record for us to do ever, Stone Roses, and then when it was my turn to choose an album next, I did the thing where we all said what albums we've owned, and I chose from that list, and I did not choose one of my favorites. I chose Sinead O'Connor, which is at the very low. I like that album a lot, but if of all those albums that we all had, that was at the very lowest. It just was the one I thought that was the most different from what we've done. So this is great. I get to talk about my favorite band so far. I first heard them when I was working at The Warehouse, which was a record store chain on the West Coast, and whatever label they were on, I think SBK in America, was promo heavy. So I had it on CD, I had it on cassette, and I had an interview disc, and I might have given you extra copies, Jim or Dan. I don't even remember because I remember there being so many floating around at that time. Jim and I saw them, not their first time through America, but their second time when their label said, nope, you have to go out one more time before you release another record. So they were bored of those songs and they were kind of bored in general, but it was still a very, very fun show. Sam and I used to write for a magazine in San Diego called 360. I interviewed Damon over the phone for that. And then I was going to school in LA, and he said, you gotta come and see us in LA tonight, even though I was in San Diego for something. It was like a Thanksgiving weekend or something. He said, I'll put you on the list. You gotta come. And So what? How can I turn that down? So raced up there and saw them at the Whiskey with my future roommate, Darren, funny enough. We were just talking in the kitchen the other day, and I said, did you ever see them? He said, I saw them at the Whiskey. I said, you saw them with me. So, and then what, a year later, Sam and I were living in the Bay Area, which really was Britpop central for America.
Yeah.
No city embraced it more. So the two of us went and saw Pulp and Blur play the Fillmore, and the ultimate Britpop bragging rights. The very next night, we went and saw Oasis at Bottom of the Hill, which is a tiny little club with Blur and Pulp and Robin Hitchcock in attendance. And Britpop fans are about as snobby as old mods, but I swear I get a jaw drop almost every time I tell people that story, which is always kind of nice.
So in that stretch of those three shows back to back, honestly, who put on the best show in that time?
Pulp opened for Blur.
Yeah, fine. That was one show.
But my question stays.
My question remains.
Which was the best?
I don't think I could call between Pulp and Blur. They were both so great that night.
I was going to say, I would probably, it's tough. I might lean Pulp, but it's a toss up.
Yeah, you can't.
Oasis isn't even in the conversation.
No way. They stood there like they always do. And in front of 1,000,000,000 crazy fans, Oasis works. But in front of 100 bored, too cool hipsters in San Francisco, I was just like, I don't get it at all. And I liked them later, but not even close. So anyway, people wonder if I'm a big Oasis fan because some friends of mine and I did a Oasis parody called The Fookin' Wankers, which you can find on YouTube. And I'm definitely Team Blur. In fact, we had a little video that we put together, the one that's on YouTube, and I saw Blur around that time. And I got to hand VHS copies to Damon and Alex. And when I told them the name of the band, Damon's grin was like the best. It made the whole thing worth it. Like having the band made it worth it. Just I had to go, we do this thing called the Fookin'Wankers. He said, really? And he kind of looked at it and just grinned and walked away. And then when I handed it to Alex, he said, oh, I heard about it, which was so So that's my fandom. Before we get into it, Sam is going to tell us a little bit about the album, Park
the
Life.
The factuals of Park Life. It's their third album, released at the end of April 1994, just a few weeks after Kurt died, just a few months before the debut Oasis album. I read on, it's something I hadn't heard before, reading on Genius, called Cool Britannia. We always knew it as Britpop, but this album helped usher in a resurgence of British artists around the world. The most fascinating thing I learned about it and reading about it, in 1990, a year before Blur's debut album, I'm reading this from Wikipedia, Damon told a group of music journalists, when our third album comes out, our place as the quintessential English band of the 90s will be assured. That as a simple statement of fact, I intend to write it in 1994. No. So just...
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Nostradamus.
Yeah, right. Nostradamus. Very nice. So that was kind of a cool thing. I wasn't able to like independently verify that that's what he said, but it's in Wikipedia.
I mean, it's on Wikipedia.
So, sure, right? So
say no more.
That's what I got.
All right. So tonight we're going to do the lesser traveled path that we've done on the podcast. You've heard us go from our least favorite track all the way up to our most favorite track. And we see the both sides of doing it that way, or just going track by track, and with each song we discuss it. We let Molly choose, and Molly chose wrong, which is fine, but that just means that I presented to her in an extremely unbiased fashion. So at least I was willing to let her have the say so. So we're gonna go track by track, and we're gonna start with song number one, and I don't mean. That's sort of a Blur reference, but we're going to start with Jim, who's going to tell us about Boys and Girls.
So Molly got it right. Track by track's the way to go.
That's what I meant to say.
Girls and Boys. Guys, this is the song that made me go, oh God, Blur has lost it. I am absolutely out. I do not need to listen to Park Life. I'm going to give it a swerve. And it was only after the next album comes out that I go, wait a minute, I might be missing something here. And I went back, and I think Park Life is my favorite album of Blur's. So it was an absolute joy to listen to this whole thing. Girls and Boys is number 11 It's number 11 out of 16 yes. because it absolutely, there's a reason why I gave the album a swerve after hearing this one. I just don't like it. I don't like it. And there's great little parts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fingers is amazing. You know, fist pump. Other than that, I'd rather talk about the other songs. So over to you, Dan.
Let's fight. Girls and Boys is the one song on Park Life that I knew and loved the whole time that I hadn't listened to Park Life. I'm like, now that is a track. Girls and Boys, I have ranked number 2 Ooh. On the album. It jams. It is so much fun. It's like a dance floor jam, which is not typical Blur. So I can see why, Jim, you kind of went, uh-oh, because it's definitely not what at least I was associating with Blur up until then. But just the way it builds, right? You have the synth, the ba-na-na-na, and then the laser pew-pews come in, and then that bass line. Like, the bass line is like, travels all over the place, right? Like super
bass.
Fun.
Yeah,
you've got that guitar
amazing.
Run down the neck that sounds like the airplane taking a... So fun, let alone the chorus of this song, which was so far ahead of its time, right?
Yeah.
I didn't pull up the lyrics, but just the whole moment we're in now in terms of what is gender even, and you know, what is attraction and all of that.
Yeah,
like,
true.
My God, they were decades ahead of time, but they turned it into a party jam, and it's just a blast. I continue to absolutely love this song.
Dan, so the first album, Leisure, is all about dance floor hits. I mean, it is the one album that my girlfriend, now my wife, that we would love dancing to that. So that I get, you know, Blur is danceable to me. Just
that's
not
fair.
Song.
I haven't listened to
just
in a while. I feel
song.
Like this is heavier on the disco spectrum. And to be
yeah,
fair, I didn't go
exactly,
back and listen to Leisure,
exactly,
but this is like lower the disco ball.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, exactly
this song is totally out of place almost on this album, whereas... Almost all of Leisure was that kind of dance.
Yeah, exactly. So. Sam.
I have Girls and Boys at 11, like
great
Jim.
Ones.
Of course.
And so, I mean, it's just a fun tune about sex on holiday. I always thought it was about sex with anyone, like just a sex song, like kind of what Dan was saying. Like it wasn't, you know, like girls, it wasn't about guys having sex with girls and guy and girls having sex with other guys. It was just like whoever, like whatever. But I never loved it, I don't think, and now it kind of seems annoying. And so here's, I've got a little bomb every episode. My bomb for this one is I liked it better when it was done by the Killers a decade later and called it Somebody Told Me. The bass is great though, like Dan was saying, like the bass is amazing. You know, you can't deny that, but It's a good album opener. It kind of pulls you in, but I like for me overall the album, the whole album feels really British, but like song by song, like pulling it out, like it fragments. So like trying to rank it song by song, it kind of fragments. But the whole album is just like Britannia,
yeah,
as a whole.
Right. Well, this song is by Duran Duran. And that's okay. And I mean, it's Alex is so John Taylor on this in the best way. And I remember the first time I ever heard it, it was at the Whiskey that night, and they were touring Modern Life is Rubbish, and they played 2 new songs. This was one of them. They played it towards the end, and it was such a banger. Like, to have never heard it and just have this yes. dance party come out of nowhere, I was instantly sold. That said, it was so out of place once Park Life came out. And it got played so much. I think I kind of tired of it a little bit.
It was all over Live 105.
So you know, we wrestle with this. You know, we all stay up nights worrying about how having a hit song is going to affect our rankings on this podcast, because there's really nothing
except
more important.
Me,
right? And in this case, it's fun to just go, you know what? It's a great song. It's so fun. And part of why I love it so much is because I have danced to it so many nights at Britpop Night in San Diego, which was done by my friends Rob and Daniel Sant, who was nice enough to read our closing credits on Stone Roses episode. They press play on this song, I can't even count how many times, and every single time it's so fun in a packed, sweaty dance floor. And they would, you know, bring the volume down so we could all do the oh, and it's you know, it's like the easiest DJ trick in the book.
What number did you rank it?
I put it at number 5, and I thought it was gonna be lower, but it ended up getting a high.
Interesting.
So on to track number 2, Dan is gonna tell us about Tracy Jacks.
Tracy Jacks. Now, this was the song, Sam, where I wrote down, oh my God, this album is so British. Like this totally nailed it for me. It brought to mind like McCartney writing his slice of life songs like Penny Lane and Obladi and Eleanor Rigby, where he's like painting the scene. Like, I totally got that from this. And man, does Damon, I assume Damon writes the lyrics, does he love his ooh and his la 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 la's and his like that, so many songs with that. It's just so catchy, just like so many other songs on this album. I put Tracy Jacks at number 7. Great, great, super catchy song. And, you know, there were songs I liked more, but it's I definitely got this one stuck in my head.
Sam.
I have Tracy Jacks at number 8. Kind of like what Dan was saying. It's so Damon, I didn't really realize until I started reading about this album that like how much of a musical genius is probably not the right word, but I mean,
throw it out there. He is.
He's a genius.
A god. Who
he's
are
a
you?
Genius. I mean, he wrote all the songs on this except for I think maybe one, and he did a bunch of the music, or did all the band did all the music, but he wrote the lyrics and everything. I mean, he's got a really broad artistic vision, which is great. And Tracy Jacks, I have it at number 8 because it's kind of samey. I love the effects on the guitar during the solo about mid song, especially the step down where it goes like, I love that. Like that guitar effect alone has the song higher for me. But otherwise, like Dan was saying, the lyrics very well observed for a 26-year-old guy. Which is to say, just at me next time, dude. Like, you know, like, it's spot on. You know, like, you're just living that life, and it's just great. And oh my God, this is too much. I've got to go lose it for a while.
I have this one way down at number 12, actually. For some reason, I always think of Tracy Jacks as a female just when I see the title, but it is about a guy. It's one of those ambiguously named ones. It has the best harmony moment of the entire album, which was "Every Day Got Closer." Yeah. But other than that, I don't have a whole lot to say, so I'm just going to play this.
Let's see how long it takes Dan and Jim to figure out who this is. Kick-ass song, first of all. Never heard it before, so thanks for contacting me, Adam. When I think of you, Adam, I think of Letterman. Somehow this song is associated with me. So whenever I see Letterman, I always think of you. And so in that spirit, here's my quick top 10 thoughts about Blur's song, Tracy Jacks. Okay, here we go. Number 10. I can totally see the Tracy Jones alliteration, Adam. I will forgive you for getting me out of bed at 8 o'clock. Number 9, loving the lyric, he knew in his heart he was over. I'd love to stay and be normal, but it's just so overrated. I relate way too much to that line, and it's not just the name Tracy Jones. I became a school teacher just like my father. All sorts of, you know, suburban nightmares I have fulfilled, but actually happy. Number 8, I'm Dan. Hi, how are you? Don't know if you remember me. If you can manage to tell your sister that Tracy Jones says hi, that would be awesome. Number 7, my husband and I saw Jim and his wife at Humphrey's pre-COVID for a concert. I can't remember if it was Steely Dan or Decemberists, but hi, Jim. And number 6, fell in love with Squeeze because of Jim. I remember a friend giving me a cassette and telling me, I think it was to memorize Tempted.
Good job, Jim.
I don't know. I had a crush on Jim and I wanted to impress him. So
I think that was it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Tracy,
I don't remember. Number 5 through 2, it's past my bedtime. I'm skipping to number 1. I just listened to your May 1st episode, gentlemen, and I'm sold. Big music fan. My husband and I have been jonesing since COVID to get out and listen to some live music. So I'm stoked to hear you guys, your banter. Already added it to my library. Really excited to listen to the Prince episode too. So well done, gentlemen. Thanks for contacting me, Adam. And I hope you guys all are doing well. Adios.
Thank you, Tracy Jones, who I think of every time I've ever heard this song for how many years? 25 years, because her name is so identical. And I thought we were Facebook friends, and somehow we're not, even though we've chatted on Facebook. So I tracked her down just so she could record that. So thanks, Tracy.
Dude, it was the Decemberists, although I wish it was Steely Dan. I'd love to see that.
Nice. All right. So that said, Jim, what do you think about Tracy Jones and or Jax?
Guys, the opening sounds, I could just imagine the crowd just roaring when they hear the opening, you know, keyboard notes. This is definitely one of those where I've only seen Blur live at Santa Barbara, right? But I'd love to see him at a festival. And I don't watch a lot of live like concert footage, but I picture the crowd just bouncing up and down to this one, you know, dun, dun.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And you know, they have it right. They go vertical, not horizontal. you know, the whole bulldozed his house down it just reminds me of Office Space, the guy with the red stapler just blowing it all up. I love everything about this song. It is totally sticks in your head. It's great. It is quintessential Blur, and it's number 5.
Nice. All right, on to End of a Century, Sam.
Let's see if any of us agreed with Molly.
Oh, yeah.
End of a Century is number 1 for me.
Oh,
there it is.
Because like, and it's a really good song, and I think it's over the albums you can hear that it's the culmination of Damon's songwriting skills. But the poetry of the lyric "We kiss with dry lips when we say goodnight." It's like that sneering or that resignation that the passion of youth has become the dry lips of old age, or at least middle age. That, I mean, floors me every time. It's just such a catchy song. It is a really great song to me. It's kind of like the one that's on the record before that I can't remember the name of. But it's kind of that. It's a little more grand in scope. It's actually not for tomorrow. I'm gonna look it up right now, so
let's all wait.
All three
let's
of us are wait. Going dude come on
yeah yeah
while
come
Sam,
on
why don't you know this
while Sam looks it up, we will say that we love our fans, and we are tackling the longest album that we've ever done, so we're trying to do this sort of a speed round tonight if you feel like we're not getting into it, but hardly
by inserting guests and
right by our standards a speed up. Round
Chemical World is the song I'm thinking of.
Yeah, nice one.
It's kind of on that scale, but it's that lyric "We kiss with dry lips," I mean, that floors me every single time, and it's gorgeous.
Nice. That has one of my favorite lyrics of the album, which is "We wear the same clothes because we feel the same," and it's such they definitely were bringing back the mod look, and it's such a great little line. I thought this was going to be my number 1. It ended up being my number 2. I felt like my main memory of it maybe pushed it up to number 1 a little too much. But in 1999, when they released 13, they didn't really do a lot of shows. They only played L.A. and New York, and we went up to see them in L.A. And they played pretty much the entire new album, came out and did 4 hits, and that was it. And we all looked at each other and went, that kind of was not cool. And that was apparently what they were doing at festivals and shows all over the world. And later that year, I went to see them at Reading Festival in England. Dream come true. Finally seeing one of my favorite bands at a huge festival, hoping for that Tracy Jacks moment that you just described, Jim.
Yeah.
And they open with Tender. And then they do another song off of 13, and everybody's like, oh God, not again. Like, it had already been written about in the press. Like, are they going to finally, like, do a festival set for these people? And the third song was End of a Century, and everybody was like, and went crazy, you know? Yeah. And it's not your stereotypical banger. You know, they could have done a bunch of other songs, and we could have gone crazy. But that one is just so great. It's just a great little, perfect little pop song, which is good on them.
Unbelievable. Okay, so I got it at number two. It is the perfect Blur song. I think the last song I described as quintessential Blur. Now this is perfect Blur.
Wait, what's the distinction? What's the distinction? Yeah.
There's going to be more of that throughout this album. Can we talk about the lead guitar? So Graham is from the Johnny Marr school of why strum a chord when you can pick a riff over.
Yes.
And it's so freaking good. It's the most unbelievable. And that this album has that in spades so many times on this album. It is the end of the century. I mean, it's getting close, right? It's 1994 or whatever. And so it's just that decade where this song fits. And I just wish I was cool enough to be at parties in 1999 on December 31st, where this was played and everybody just freaking lost their minds. But I know I was listening to Prince, you know what I mean? And just like, damn it.
You sheep.
Yeah. I didn't have control of the sound booth. It is so good. It's number two. Over to Dan, who's, I'm sure, going to blow this.
Guys, End of a Century, I like it, but it's not that good a song.
You were right, Jim. You were right.
Number one.
I mean, like, it's hard because I understand, like, Blur is such a massive part of Britpop and what made Britpop huge. To me, though, this feels like, and maybe we're saying the same thing, but it feels like a fairly by the numbers Britpop anthem. Like, I just don't hear enough interesting stuff. Love the lyrics that you guys both pointed out. Love those lyrics, actually. But it's, you know, it's got the bass line that goes down by half a step each, you know, through the verse, basically. And it's got the harmonies and it sounds fully Beatlesque, and I like it. It's number nine.
Oh,
you guys are getting a little excited. You guys are getting a little excited.
Wow.
Oh, I forgot that.
Come on, Jim. How boring would this have been if I was like, well, I was debating between two and one. It's number nine. I love that I was last on that one. That was perfect.
That was great. Yeah.
I mean, we've kind of been waiting for an episode where Dan is the contrarian, and this might be it to some extent.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Not like you're super anti, but
I don't love it. I'm feeling. Yeah,
isn't it great? You can be Simon Cowell for the night. there's one line in there, and there's a few of these throughout researching this or listening to it closely of lines I did not realize that's what he was singing after hearing it a million times. And on this one, it was, "Can you eat her? Yes, you can." I'm like, wait.
Really?
Is that what he says? Never knew that one. Yeah. All right.
I just want to say this next track is the one that I am most curious where people put it. Like, I don't know how to predict y'all.
Yeah, I Park Life, I honestly had a really hard time with. I have it at number eight. And I love that it's unique enough to have this, like, iconic bit of spoken word mixed with a catchy chorus. But I don't really, really necessarily love either part. It's such an anthem. And it's one of those, like, it's I can't believe I have to form an opinion on this song. It's just so... It's like the air. It's like I've heard it so many times and danced to it so many
totally.
Times. It's like, it's so strange. It's great that they got Phil Daniels to do it. If you guys don't know, he was in Quadrophenia. That's kind of his main claim to fame. And it was an obvious sort of like bringing in a British mod cultural icon. And at the time, they were kind of carrying that torch, which was kind of great to watch because you've got Damon singing Waterloo Sunset and Park Life with Ray Davies on television. They're singing Nightclub with Terry Hall from The Specials on television. And it was just, you know, so much has been said about how British this album is and how it might be the most British album ever, which is great. One random reference that I didn't think I was going to be making again on this podcast, Dan brought up faithfully by Journey during our Prince episode. I never thought I would have a Faithfully moment. I haven't done a lot of touring, but I was doing a month in Spain and Italy with friends' bands, and by the end, I was pretty over it and missing home. And we were playing Valencia, and I was having a particularly bad night with some back pain and some infighting in the band and all this stuff. And what was happening back in America, Blur was playing the Hollywood Bowl, and Fred Armisen got up to do Park Life with them. I just watched it last night. I'm like, I don't think I've watched it since that night when I was just like almost in tears going, I would so have been there. And it was, I never wanted to watch it again because I so missed out. It was great. It was absolutely great. So I highly recommend you all go watch it.
That's awesome. Park Life, Adam, you had it at 8. I've got it at 7. It spent time in number 4 on my list building up to this. It is so freaking good. It is so English. I love the little lines. They love a bit of it. I love that it's the dustman, not the garbage man.
Totally.
I love the best line is I thought about leaving the house. It's just, God, I just love this song.
And the fact that he thought about it, I just love it.
Oh my God. You said you don't like either part, or you're not into that much either part. I love both parts of this song. I love the chorus. I love the spoken word. It is perfectly done, and do it again. You know, I want more of this. So, but anyway, it's number 7 because there's 6 unbelievable songs above it, but it's just so great. Dan.
Yeah, speaking of spoken word and then sung chorus, I was laughing because 2 episodes ago in our class of 1980s episode, class of 1980, I did this whole thing about how Life During Wartime was this totally unique song that became a huge hit that was basically
Once in a Lifetime. You said Life During Wartime. You're welcome.
Right. Once in a Lifetime. Yes. Thank you. Gosh, I don't know anything tonight.
We'll get letters if we don't.
Something about life.
I know. Apologies to David. Where it's basically like primarily about the lyrics, like driving it. And then this super catchy chorus comes in, and I was talking about how unique that was, and then here we are 2 albums later, and I'm like, oh, this is basically like the Britpop version of Once in a Lifetime. Where do I land? Like, the lyrics are funny. I mean, the verses are funny, but they're a little novelty, right? Like, you can only listen to it so many times in my mind. That's not true. You can listen to it 1,000 times, but that's not the part I love. It's that chorus, that fucking soaring chorus. Talk about the song I could not get out of my head. And of course, I already knew this song completely, but just, my God, hearing those backing vocals, I cannot imagine, Adam, you saying you don't love the chorus. Like, the chorus is so powerful. This song also, for me, traveled all over this list. And ended up at number 4 because I was a song like this where you could be in a small packed pub and everyone could be singing it, and you could be in a stadium of 100,000 and everyone could sing it. Like, this is just a friggin' anthem. And for my money, the best line is, it gives me a sense of enormous well-being.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Dan likes the lyrics enough, by the way. You can't see this at home. He's got an artist representation of some of the lyrics hiding behind him. We'll have to post a picture of it because it's pretty great.
So that was number 4, Dan?
Number 4.
Okay, I'm just keeping track here. Hey, Adam, my son just walked in and handed me the tape that you made of me for Blur Park Life.
What is it? Show it. Put it to the camera.
It's just black and white printed.
Well done.
And then the inside label, it says it's nothing special.
Oh, nice. Thanks, then, Jason.
Then you included 2 songs at the end. I guess there was extra space on the second side.
That's so
Heaven, Adam. Heaven, Buffalo Tom, and September Girls.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That cover of Heaven is good.
Who's doing September Girls?
The big star, probably. That might have been your introduction. Nice. Okay, yeah. So Sam, Park Life.
Park Life, I like the music and the lyrics. I love the guest lyricist and the full accent. My favorite lyric is, I put my trousers on, have a cup of tea, and I think about leaving me house.
Yeah, right.
It's so great. You can't stop that. And the chorus is great. It's number 3 for me.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's
so fun.
More than pretty much every other song, this song embodies this album. And it's the title track, of course, And, you know, I have End of a Century at number one, but it's just, it's the whole fucking thing, right? It's England. It's the park life. It's observational. It's, yeah, it's awesome. Number three.
Saxophone played by Graham Coxon. Small trivia bit.
Really?
Yes. On we go, Jim, to Bank Holiday.
It's number 14. It doesn't mean I don't like it. 14 out of 16.
I'm not surprised, I'll say.
It doesn't mean I don't like it. It doesn't mean I don't really like it. But, okay, let me just say this. I did not know what he was spelling. A-G. I thought it was A-G. A-A-E. And I was like, wait, let me get my guitar because maybe I'll do the chords and it's A-G-A-A-E.
I thought it was
A-A-E. And
then
I was like, is he spelling algae? I have no idea what he's saying. You know what I mean? And then I looked him up right before the pod and it's A-G-A-I-N. Yeah. And then I listened to the song again. And it's not. There's no way there's an N in that. I
the
can
last
hear
one,
it.
The very last time he says it, you can hear A-I-N.
Oh, God.
But this is just other like, than this that.
This is just like the pulling muscles from A-Shell controversy. Of
A-Shell.
By the way, anyway, I will never listen to this song again and not think of him spelling algae.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I thought he was just saying my initials, but, you know, that's cool too. But I seriously thought he was saying A-G-A-A-A for the entire time.
Yeah. Dan.
Bank Holiday, I have at number 6. Wow. I want an entire album of this. I want punk rock Blur. So much friggin' fun. You know, again, like, as Jim will say every episode, guys, I did my homework, and I did 16 songs worth of homework. But the reality is when it's 16 songs and you haven't really heard it before, it takes a while to sit. So I'm curious sort of where some of these would settle. And this is one of those songs I really feel like. But all I know is I put it this high because I was like, I want a whole album of Bank Holiday.
Nice. Sam.
Bank Holiday is number 5 for me.
Wow.
And solely for the A-G. Which, apparently, it spells again, but I always thought it were the chord. And I think it was Adam. I think when Adam and I were living together, he's like, oh, he's saying the chords. He's saying A-G-A-A-A. Because that's just been in my head forever. But it almost sounds like oi, oi, oi.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know.
A little Jewish, a little skinhead.
Yeah, a little skinhead, yeah. But it also, it's got that punk feel. It's got that great guitar and keyboard freak out. I really like it. It's a number 5.
I really like it too. I have it at number 3.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, I agree with Dan. It's like, it's so punk, and it's not like anyone ever thinks of them as a punk band, but they're doing it just as good as any, you know, punk band from the 80s,
so
it's so well recorded. Thank you, Stephen Street, who's famous for being swooshy and whatever, but man, it's just so gritty, and everyone is just playing tight, and it just is awesome. There is a crazy fast version that I forgot about on one of my drives. They were on Jules Holland, and they're playing it so fast. It's just unbelievable, and it's totally tight, like, they're to their credit. Again, with the Britishisms that, you know, we learned about British stuff through our bands. So I learned a little bit about Bank Holiday back then. I saw them at Reading Festival, which is always on Bank Holiday. So I always have a little, like, you know, tender place in my heart for that. But they do the punk thing on a couple other, was it Chinese Bombs? I can't remember the name of the song on self-titled. But they do it well, for sure. Up next, we've got Dan telling us about Badhead.
Yeah, Badhead was another one that traveled around a little bit for me. I ended up putting it at number 10. Love the opening. Love that little guitar that kicks in. The star of the song is those little organ riffs that come in. Boop, 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 boop. The beginning is kind of Sunshine on My Shoulder by John Denver. And then the chorus is totally that song from the end of Tootsie. and you're telling me it might be you. That's all I could get in my head.
No, don't
that
do that.
That is deep
to me.
80s, so bitch. Yeah. That is like, deep
do that
80s.
To me.
It's these nice. Two like early 80s, like easy listening. Jim, I thought you would dig both of those references.
Oh, God.
I couldn't get either of those out of my head, but you know, it's in a Blur package. Number 10.
Sam.
Badhead, I have at number 7. And this did not travel far from Bank Holiday for me. It was always right neck and neck. It's solely for the horns intro coming out from Bank Holiday, because Bank Holiday is just like a banger, a fucking banger. And then it's just like, bah, 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 these horns. And it's almost heralding a change in tone for the album.
Yeah.
You know, like you've got the dancey sex of Girls and Boys and Tracy Jacks and Park Life and then Bank Holiday, and then Badhead's like, nope, we're done with that. We're changing. And the horns bring that in. It's not like a standout track, but those horns right there are so changing good. It. Yeah, it's good. It's good. And I've got it at number 7.
That's interesting that you talked about the change in tone, because, yeah, it's so upbeat, and then you've got like 3 or 4 in a row, and I was thinking it's like this is a lull for four. But for some reason there's a little guitar bit on this that I could not get out of my head for like 2 days. It's so simple. The do 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 do. It is so simple, and Graham is one of my favorites, and the fact that he can play these insane picking things, and Stephen Street said something in an interview I was watching recently where he plays with his feet as much as his hands, because he's just so great at using pedals well. And he definitely comes from the Johnny Marr school of not really guitar solos, but guitar breaks. There's not really like these traditional you know, oh, here comes the guitar solo. There's one in here, but it's also really noisy that we'll get to later. But I like it. I have it at number 7.
Okay. I have it at number 8. Badhead, after the Bank Holiday and the 6 packs of beer, and it's back to work. And then you have got the Hangover and the Badhead in the morning. It's absolutely on purpose. It's absolutely on purpose. So it is number 8, and it's great.
Nice. Sam, tell us about The Debt Collector.
The Debt Collector, I've got it number 15. It's a cool oompa track, dudes. Like, you know, for a band of their fame, it's a really interesting choice. A
cool oompa track.
Wait, did anyone not write down the word oompa? Because I did.
I did.
Jim?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't.
Nice.
Damon's like, we weren't going for that at all.
it was more of like, you know, it was more of like a I don't even know, but yeah, it's it's interesting choice compared to Modern Life, because the first album was all like kind of dancey tracks, right? Leisure was like that. Modern Life is Rubbish. The only real detour from the rock song kind of mold was Miss America, and on Park Life they have a couple departures. This is one of them. It is what it is. I think I had it higher. I had it ranked above some other songs, and then a few other songs kind of like started jumping. The more and more and more and more I listened, they started like jumping the queue. That's a Britishism, UKism. Nice. Anyway, and The Debt Collector kind of kept falling, and at the end for me it was just like, okay, yeah, it's fine. I don't hate it. I don't ever like skip it, but it's number 15.
I've got it down at number 13, and I appreciate that they're doing something kind of silly, you know, you know, when I think about Blur versus Oasis, I think about, oh, one of us has a sense of humor and one of us kind of doesn't, even though Oasis's interviews are like the funniest things ever, but
unintentionally funny.
Not even intentionally a lot of the time, you know, like, but Blur has their tongue in their cheek a lot of the time, musically, lyrically. They're clever enough to do it, and they do it well here. Did anyone catch his count in on the beginning? One Mississippi, two Mississippi, which is an American thing. I was interested, weird to hear that. I never noticed it before, especially since recently Brendan Benson himself wished Jim a happy birthday, and we talked about ranking his album One Mississippi. So I don't know if that's foreboding or not, but
he loves to be ranked.
Yeah, apparently, Jim.
I have it at number 16, guys, last. And let me just tell you, it's not a bad. It's not a bad track. I don't have much to say that hasn't been said. I would just say that they can do anything, and it's great. I love this band. I would love, just like I wanted to be at that hip end of the century party on December 31st, I would love to open a hip theme park where this is the merry-go-round music that plays as the carousel goes around.
Nice.
100%.
That's where I want to live, places like that. Dan.
Yeah, that's the problem with going last. You guys stole my two lines. I wrote great Oompa music, and if I build my own merry-go-round, I'm using this.
No way.
Oh, and I have it at number 14.
14.
Cool. Well, speaking of last place, I've got Far Out down at number 16.
Oh, my God. How is that possible?
How many of us wrote Scooby-Doo down for this one?
No, I did not.
Really? I thought for sure. Yeah, that organ that comes in, that doo-doo-doo is so like, oh, they're coming up to the mansion. I thought of it every single time, right?
Hilarious.
So this is Alex's song, and it's dumb, cute, fun. I wonder if it has something to do with royalties, because I know that, if that you're going to have a big selling album, I'm not sure how they split their songwriting. But I know like The Who used to do that. Oh, let's let, Keith Moon have a writing credit on this one, because you get, one out of 16, 1/16 of a writing credit or whatever on an album that sells millions, you're going to do well. And if you don't, there's like all kinds of financial resentment that can happen. I never really noticed how Syd Barrett it sounded until listening to this, and I was like, wow. And then 2 days later, I looked on Wikipedia for something, and I saw that someone was comparing it to Syd Barrett. So well done. Fun, short little song.
Wow. I did not know that. I didn't know it was written by Alex. I didn't know about the songwriting credit stuff. That is interesting stuff. I always thought there were three instrumentals on this album. And I was like, wait, where's the third one? And it's this. It's the beginning of Far Out. And it's so good. It is so good. It's number 10. It's number 10. Going into space. It's catchy and short and sweet, and you snap your fingers to it.
What's
love
the catchiest
it,
part, though? I forgot to say. What's the catchiest part?
Oh, I don't know.
Sun. It's like it's so hard not to sing along with that word.
Yeah,
it's the
great.
It's the part after. It's the do 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 do.
It's so good, Dan.
First of all, two things. Three pieces of housekeeping I got to take care of really quick. First of all, Tracy Jones, hi, I do remember you. Forgot to say that. Number two, Jim, if you could turn every crush that a girl had on you into making them a Squeeze fan, you have done good in this world, my friend. So bless you for that.
I had no idea.
And number three, I love how Jim, every time he says the number, he says it like that is the final answer. Like in the back of the book, I looked, it is number 10.
Yeah.
I have Far Out at number 13. I totally dug this song. The only reason it's that low is it's like half a thought, right? It's a minute and a half. It kind of ends mid. I want to see where they go with Bank Holiday, I want to see where they go with Far Out. Like this is just fun. It's weird. It's out there. I like Weird Blur. Weird Blur actually reminds me of the experimentation that Damon gets into with Gorillaz, which just goes in 1,000 different directions, right? Yeah. And even with like 13 and some of the later Blur stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I think
stuff.
It just becomes so fascinating. Anyways, I really enjoyed this on this album of some really kind of typical sounding stuff. I thought this was awesome. And if it was longer, I think it would have done better actually.
That's awesome.
So for me, Far Out lands at number 14. And I had it really low at first, but where it sits on the album is kind of perfect, because from Debt Collector into Far Out, then to the end, I think it's really good. But it, for me, it's trying to be a little too hard to be 60s. My cultural reference is Barbarella or possibly Love. And it's a pun. I get it, far out. They're planets. They're star names. Great. But that said, it's kind of a cool little trippy tune, and I'm all for a good astronomy song.
Okay, to the end. I'm going to start, and it is number three. Ooh. I love this style of Blur. They perfect it with the Universal in the next album. It is the greatest. Hey, Sam, this is, you know how I was making fun of Sting for going speaking in French on that one song?
Yeah.
This is how you use the French language, is like in this song. I want to hear what you guys have to say about it, though, because I just love it. That's all I have to say. Dan, what do you got?
So there were a lot of songs on this album, like Park Life and Bank Holiday, that kind of moved all over the place. To the End was one of those songs that did not jump around. To the End is the number one song on this album.
Oh, yes!
Wow.
Looks like we made it. All right.
I'm like, this is his niche. Damon Albarn is the Britpop Sinatra. Like, he totally fits that role. This is like Tranquility Base before Alex Turner thought that up. Like, it's so at the end of Outer Space, playing this cheesy lounge, Alex Turner, Arctic Monkeys. Like, you know, he started doing this style. Okay. But I was like, oh, he totally cribbed it from this.
Oh, yeah.
The strings, huge, the xylophone, the whispers come in, like, oh man, as my daughter would say, like, this is a vibe, like this whole, you can imagine
your dad,
where you
my
are.
My youngest?
you're in a dinner club at the end of the universe, and those lyrics, like, it's such a crushing song, but he's singing it like, hey, darling, we made it to the end, right? It's like totally wry. I absolutely adored this song. Excellent. And I don't remember having heard it before this, which was a phenomenal discovery.
Sammy.
I have To the End. I was surprised that it wasn't number one. I have it at number two. I love Damon's voice on the choruses. I love the little 60s guitar hits, the frant, frant, you know. It reminds me of The Jam, actually, a little bit of those sounds. But Dan said it, and it looks like, I mean, like the heights his voice reaches there. We might have made it. Yes, it looks like we've made it to the end. Oh, fuck. It's because it's soaring, and you're like, yeah, we made it. We made it. We made it where? I'm sorry? Like, what? What?
Totally. Totally.
It's brutal, and it's so fucking good. It's so good. Again, I'm surprised it didn't make it to number one, but it's if it's not number one, it's number two. It has to be.
Wow.
Well, we'll so see what great. Adam has to say about that.
Oh, my gosh. And I love this song, but I really do love so many songs more, so I'm almost embarrassed that this is, you guys seem to be in solidarity. I've got it down at number nine.
Oh, yeah, you should be embarrassed. You should be embarrassed. Yeah.
And I love this kind of stuff too. And it's so funny because I was totally thinking of Jim's description of that one Love song where it sounds like a 60s variety show and they slowly zoom in on it.
Yeah.
It's like this has that kind of like, you know, groovy 60s feel to it for sure.
Totally.
I love that they have Leticia from Stereo Lab, who I love, doing that. And there is a version where there's a lot more French. There's a lot more of her on it. That's great. But it's interesting that Jim said that they perfected it on the Universal. And I love this album. And I love The Great Escape, like, parallel. And it's definitely one of those times where a band like hit their stride, and it's not like they did anything so different. I feel like any of these songs on either album could have been switched. It's a little bit, some people would say Rubber Soul and Revolver, or to me a better example is the Beastie Boys when they did Check Your Head and No Communication, where they were using a lot of this, like, a similar way of recording, and they ended up with kind of a similar vibe where it's great, and I could not ever like rank one above the other because it seems like so similar even though they weren't recorded at the same time, but love it anyway. On we go to London Loves, Dan?
London Loves is a lot of fun. This was another song I don't remember ever having heard before, and I was totally into it. I'm like, this is just so David Bowie fashion. Like, it feels like it's a total homage to that. That sound at the beginning, so I still have my Yamaha DX21 synthesizer, and unfortunately I didn't boot it up before this because it's tucked away, but it's got that synth sound at the beginning. Yeah, that like dirty bass, you know. I can't remember that sound. I wanted to look up what that sound is called, but it's got all these great little sonic bits, the mystery of a speeding car, right? Just a great line, have no idea what it means. And talk about like sing-alongs in a concert, like I have to imagine the whole crowd is going, London Love, singing that along. So loved it. I put it at number 8. My only complaint, you know, we talked a lot on the Sinead episode about never-ending endings, the songs that don't end. I do not need the 1.5 minutes of radio or whatever it is at the end. Like, I'm like, all right, moving on. We're done with the song. but other than that, a lot of fun.
Sam.
I had it also at number 8 times 2. I had it at number 16.
Oh.
This song.
Whoa.
This song was annoying.
Psych.
I listened to it.
I thought this would be up the top 4 for you. No. Wow.
London Loves. Oh, are you serious? Again and again and again. So annoying. I actually skipped it on subsequent listens. Like, I listened to the full album. Whoa. Like 3-4 times, and then I'm like, okay, London Loves, down, 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 boom, bottom. I don't want to hear this again. Not even saved by the guitar. Not even. Oh.
Yeah.
There's always one that you're really wrong about. And
I know, and the same thing with you, which is, but you're actually wrong about more than just one.
How does that work?
It's kind of weird. It is. It's weird.
All right, shoot, I can already tell Adam's going to agree with you. Let's see.
Yeah, I've got it down at number 15. You kind of nailed it. There's a really cool guitar part. But other than that, it's like his falsetto's not that amazing. It doesn't really go anywhere. The album was almost titled London, so I thought that was kind of interesting to read. It was also soft porn at one point. They were going to put a picture of Buckingham Palace and call it soft porn, which I think
nice.
Is amazing.
Oh my God. That would have been great.
But the one kind of like tangent side memory that it kind of makes me happy is thinking about playing in London, which I don't want to do my whole life. And we got to play a club in Camden Town called Dublin Castle on the last night that we did Stones and Roses, and it was where Madness and Blur got their start. And it's all over their website, it's all over their walls, that they have like all these great huge posters of them and pictures of them playing there. And I found a picture of them in front, and it just got me so excited to go to England. That picture of Blur in front of the place we were playing just made me so happy. Jim.
Okay, so London Loves is number 9. Dan, you are more right than the rest.
Appreciate that.
And guys, there's this I don't want to call it call and response, but two parts of what Blur does. And here it's the guitar, like, you know, dun 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 dun, and then a new guitar comes in, and it's just definitely distinctive. Maybe it's in the right and the left ear, I don't know, I forgot. But it same way, two parts to Tracy Jax, and then Works in Civil Service. So yeah, you can see the crowd singing that. You could see the crowd singing London Loves.
Yep.
The way it's, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They do that a lot, and I like it a lot, and it's a great song, and it's number 9.
There's a couple of times where Damon is doing both parts. Like Bank Holiday, he's doing two parts. It's like he can't get enough breath to put it in, so it's like, I don't know if they pan it too, but yeah, there's a few of those where that happens.
Exactly.
On we go to Trouble in the Message Center, Sam.
I've got it at number 9. It almost feels like a Police track off Zenyatta. Or maybe that's just the tone and the bass. And this one kind of, it just floated in the middle, and that's why it's number 9. It never really elevated. It never really did anything to drop. It's just kind of right there.
I kind of felt the same way about it. Like, it's not, it's kind of like London Loves. Like, it doesn't really have a lot going on, but it's got that energy, so I kind of elevated it above a couple other things. So I have it at number 11. We don't have a lot to say about it.
You know what? I said it's number 12. It is album filler. I really think we're not doing this song justice, by the way all three of us have talked about it, so maybe Dan will save it because there's not a bad song in this album. But I agree with you guys. Dan?
Nah. I have it at number 12. It's energy, definitely. Like, I respect the energy. I kept looking for the hook that I was missing that I liked. They throw the 80s book at this one. I put Missing Persons meets Falco. I don't think that's right, but I was looking for something. The other thing, it totally reminds me of, this song totally reminded me of Flight of the Conchords, where they just get into a genre and they do something that sounds just like it's enough of that genre. So there's that song Robots, where it's like, the humans are dead. That's what this reminds me of.
Right.
Good fun, but number 12.
Nice.
You were right, Jim.
All right. Next up, we've got Clover Over Dover. And I was kind of surprised when I saw 16 tracks. You know, I think I probably am going to get completely burnt out and think that everything is sounding too samey by the end. And
not this record.
I could not believe how many like cool little gems there were at the end that I had higher than all these other songs. I'm kind of shocked. Soft spot in my heart because my first dog was named Clover. But it's a great little riff and harpsichord line, and just a lot of cool little hooks. And one of the most interesting ones I thought was this kind of like shimmery keyboard that's almost like a choral effect. And I'm like, where have I heard that? And it took me a while. It is almost identical to the same keyboard sound that is in The Smiths' Oscillate Wildly, which Stephen Street also produced.
Oh,
is
that, okay.
It's, I get listen that. To it.
Yeah.
I'll go study that.
Yeah.
Where is that?
That's a great point. Late in the album. Hear that. Yeah.
What part of the song?
It's like kind of like under that. It's like, it kind of like doubles some of the keyboard parts. But in Oscillate Wildly, it goes. It's like this very. It's like yeah. It's almost like a. I know
Oscillate Wildly really
yeah, yeah,
well.
Yeah. Listen closely to Clover Over Dover. There's a few parts where you can kind of hear that.
Yeah, guys, listen closely. Come on.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll wait.
My bad. I'm listening right now. Actually,
Adam, right. Can you tell us where you have it ranked?
Oh, I have that at number 6.
Number 6. Wow. Totally agree with you on the. All these, it's not the same. You know, every song is different, and every song, that's what made it so hard to rank. You're absolutely right. This is number 6. It was number 3 at one point on my listing, and it dropped. It is repetitive, you know? I think that's why I was like, okay, I gotta inch it down a little bit, because it does do the same thing, but I love that groove. Like I love the song Sons and Daughters by the Decemberists, bringing up them again. It's the same thing over and over again, but I love that thing. I love the, I don't know if it's harpsichord, I don't know if it's piano forte. I mean, I swear to God, Downton Abbey and Bridgerton are trying to teach me these things and I'm not paying attention. I love it. And then you have that unbelievably quintessential, perfect Blur guitar riff. It's just so perfect. And that with the harpsichord together. And I always wonder, does he write the riff and then they build the song from there? Or does Damon come in with the song and Graham goes, I can put a riff over that? I want to know, you know? Same way I want to know with Lennon and McCartney, a lot of things. Like, where did the seeds start? So, but it's great, and it's number 6. Dan.
Disagree, guys. Clover, Clover Over Dover. Yes, it sounds a bit different. It's got the harpsichord, I agree, but there's nothing here that exciting. I don't hate it. I've got it at 11. It's nice, but we haven't talked about our lines, you guys. We have not talked about our lines. My line is 10. 10 and above, totally into. Clover Over Dover, I would not miss it. The lyrics, we rhymed clover and over and Dover. Those are the end. It didn't grab me.
I never even noticed that until I said it just now, because they space those words out, right?
Yeah, each line ends in one of those, yeah.
I mean, if we're doing lines, I was...
If we're doing lines.
Whoa!
Sweet!
That's great.
This is the song.
Britpop was all about drugs and Coke was big. So, but if we're going there, I'm also 10 and up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let the others fill it in when they're up. Tell us.
It's funny though. I'm 10 and up as well.
Hey. Yeah.
Top 10.
Guys, look, I'm a Blur fan just like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sam?
Yeah.
Or did you say Sam?
I didn't say, I haven't said where I ranked it yet. My line is probably under 15. I like them all pretty well. Debt Collector, Far Out, Lot 105, like all the way up.
Just name them all. You know you want to. God
I don't.
Damn it.
Different podcast. London Loves is the only one I didn't. I really was just like, eh, this one kind of bites. But Clover Over Dover, I had at number 10. Listening to it, listening to y'all talk, I might have moved it up a little bit. It might rise to the number 9 or number 8, but it's a nice tune. I like the music, the harmonies, the melody. It's not anything that I, you know, like when I listened to it, I was like, this is a great song. And I listened to it and somebody was like, oh, it's about suicide. I was reading the lyrics thing on Genius and they're like, oh, it's about suicide. And I'm like, he never really talks about actually doing it. He's like, if I do it, then it's over. But then he talks about getting together with a girl and yeah, you know, you'll let you push me over. And it's just kind of a fun little song. I mean, it's definitely filler to me. Like I think it was Dan that said it. It sounds like filler, but I like it. It might go a little bit higher, but I've got it at number 10.
I'm glad I don't research what songs are about because
yeah,
I don't want that.
Sucks. I need to stop doing it.
Totally.
I really
thought
do.
About that. I think I'm going to go with the next track, Adam, right? And
yep.
It is Magic America, which is number 4. I love this fucking tune. I love it. It's the one that I always have in my head humming along. Every little lick, every trick, everything that they put on in the studio works for me. I love Damon and his la 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 la's. Found Love on Channel 44. Everything that happens in this song is great. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it because I don't have much to expand on. But number 4 is definitely the right spot for me.
Is that me?
Dan.
I just want to point out that Dan, one of Dan's signature moves is this pregnant pause, and Sam has totally co-opted it this episode. Jim has had to prompt him almost every time, and I love that. Trending.
Because it's going all over the place. I don't know what order we're in. I'm waiting for y'all to tell
me.
Yeah,
I'm in the vibe. I'm with you, Sam. Like, I actually don't think I'm doing the dramatic pause tonight. I'm actually trying to do better about that, but I just don't know when it's my turn. I'm just...
It's the same order all night.
It has not been. It absolutely has not been.
Jim, I'm just going
You're
with
after
the
Dan
flow.
Every time,
I'm going
it's
with the
Cinco
flow.
De Mayo and some of us are drinking margaritas.
Oh, yeah, that's
who.
Fair.
All right, go ahead, Dan.
Jim, you say you can't wait to hear what I have to say, but I think you will be able to wait. I have Magic America at 16.
Oh.
Whoa.
Guys, this is to me the essence of filler on a 16 song album. It's not a terrible song. I will admit I'm being a little bit harsh because I need to teach the boys a lesson. This song is straight down the middle, just Blur. It's yes, there's a few little touches, but nothing to me about this song is interesting. What I'll say about all the other songs, there's something that catches me. There's something interesting. There's something weird. This one to me sounds like what album? What's the name of that again? It's just. I didn't like the lyrics. I didn't like the melody. I Can Live Without Magic America. Sorry about that, Jim.
Sam, could you fix that?
It's number 12 for me. I dig it pretty well. I've got it below Girls and Boys. So, like, that's kind of an interesting place. Sure. So you can tell where I've placed it. But, like, the womp womp keyboard solo, I think, sucks. It's terrible.
Oh.
And good for you. Like, that's great. But for me, that dragged this song down so much for me. That womp womp keyboard, I was like, fuck. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, no. Big Bank Holiday.
Thank you. Yes, yes. More Bank Holiday.
Yeah, I agree with Sam on that. I thought this was way higher. I think this one fell the furthest. I'm like, oh, yeah, I love this song. Mainly because the first few seconds. I think it's like we were talking about how when we did Pretty in Pink, Shell Shock has this incredible first 30 seconds, and then it kind of doesn't go anywhere. This one, it starts with that bang, that weird like keyboard thing.
Yeah,
and then,
that part's love it. Cool.
And super then Graham's Beatles. Like super broken riff, like that tone of just like he does that so well. And as with each album, he gets more like weirdly angular with that kind of stuff, and
that.
It's so good. Speaking of patented pregnant pauses, there's one in here, and that is a super Blur move. They have a lot of songs where they do these like jan 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 bah, bah, and then they all come in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of songs where they do that, and it works. It, like every time, I'm like, yep. You can just totally see a crowd freaking out on that and just like screaming along when they come back in. It's an okay lyric, not quite as good as "Look Inside America," which they did a couple. Albums later where they're kind of taking a look at what it's like to tour in America and talking about getting an ad on K-Rock and things like that. This one's not quite as interesting. Another character study, as we say, that they got compared to the Kinks a lot, specifically Village Green. These albums are both great and very British. That's probably part of the reason why. Dan, tell us about Jubilee, please.
Wait.
Tell us where you ranked that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was number 10, so...
Yep. Okay.
Number 10.
All right. So to me, that's a lull right there. 10 through 13, London Loves through Magic America is a bit of a lull. And then we hit Jubilee and I'm like, that's a fucking song.
Yeah.
Jubilee, I ended up at number 5. I'm already mad at myself. I think it's too low. I had this as high as number 2. I love this song. This is another flavor of Blur. It kind of reminds me of like M.O.R. on their self-titled one. I love just rock and roll, like Damon with all that swagger. It kind of has like that Suffragette City energy.
Yeah,
definitely heard some Bowie stuff just on the album in general. Mm-hmm. Just the attitude of it. This song has great horns. I know we talked about horns on other songs, but I love when the horns come in halfway through. It totally lifts the song up into another level. And then I'm so stoked I get to go first because it has a Missile Command solo. This has to be the greatest video game solo in the history of music. Like, it fits perfectly. He talks about playing their video games and it comes in and like, it's been a long time since I've played Missile Command, but I don't believe those two sounds follow just in that exact order. Like, I think they edited it to hit the beat like they literally, it's a solo. Like they turn those sound effects into a solo. Anyways, this song to me, so much fun. Just this really exuberant energy. This is a flavor of Blur that I totally love. And Park Life versus Jubilee was probably the thing I was, up until the minute we hit record, I was still debating the order of those two.
I have Jubilee at number 6. You mentioned the video game solo. The first one I remember is probably the Mattel football in Logical Song. Do you know
nice.
That? Remember that one?
Oh, right. I saw that recently, but never looked into it.
Pleep, pleep, like that thing. So that's funny. But I didn't remember that this was Missile Command, but
I
definitely hear it.
Not positive? I think so, though.
Oh my God, you were saying like it was fact.
No. I looked it up.
I don't look anything up.
Yeah, I was going to look it up later.
There's a machine or whatever, like a little handheld device that had 4 buttons on it, and you could make these sounds.
I kind of remember those.
He had one live at the Budokan. I think he has one in his hand, and he's just like holding the microphone to it.
Oh,
and he plays on his computer games.
That
All right.
So
well,
funny.
It reminds me of that. Before we get the letters again, to your point, Adam.
So Jubilee is, to me, it sounds like Old Cheap Trick. Or Supergrass, but Supergrass came after this, so maybe Supergrass sounds like this. But I've got it at number 6. It's just a good basher. Love it. 6.
Nice.
Good basher.
Yeah, we we were talking earlier and Charlotte suggested that I get that computer sound. So if anyone's going on too long on this episode, we're trying to keep it short. That would be our sound to make them like, sorry.
That's hilarious. It's like so the gong.
How do we use that for you?
Oh, you won't even hear me. It's just that.
Okay.
So I never noticed the Bowie thing, but yeah, somewhere I saw that in looking around the other night, and I was like, oh my gosh, how did I miss that? It's definitely got that deep sax that's very like glam Bowie.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely
another That's What They're Saying lyrics that I thought for a million. I thought for sure they were saying, hey, Jesse, take a something. I don't know what it was. Hey, Jesse, take a wreck. He dresses incorrectly is what he's saying in that part. I was like, no way. It's Dan was noting the horns. Horns and hard rock is not usually a combo you hear a lot. The one band that I would immediately think of is Rocket from the Crypt.
Rocket.
Which this doesn't sound anything like, but it definitely, but maybe it does in
with that
parts.
Horn, it does, yeah.
Right. Oh God, what's the guy who played the Super Bowl? Oh shoot, I'm blanking. The newer soul guy who played the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Mars.
Bruno Mars.
Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah, he had a song that was really rocking and had horns, and I remember posting on Facebook. I'm like, is that the closest we're ever going to hear to having Rocket play the Super Bowl? And everybody in San Diego, all my friends were like, yes, it totally sounded like Rocket. And it really
amazing.
Worked for him. So a little bit on that one. What you nice. Got at Jim?
Oh, my God. What do
oh,
you
number
have
four.
It at?
Number four.
Adam's got his new
I'm not going until
trademark.
You go.
I get really distracted when I talk about Rocket. Sorry.
All right. I will have everybody remember that Dan put End of a Century at number 9, which was absolutely against the grain of the rest of us three. Before I tell you that your 5, 6, and 4 are incorrect. Jubilee is it's a great song. It's 13, though. It is not my favorite style of Blur. We're going to get to my favorite style. And I think that, you know, Dan, to your credit, you love To the End and you love Jubilee. I think you're a Blur fan. I think you should.
I like 10 songs on the album. I clearly am now.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's number 13.
All right. Sam, what do you think of the song This Is a Low by Blur?
This Is a Low is not a low. It's a high. It's number 4. It sounds a little like Radiohead, or again, Radiohead ended up sounding a little like this. This song's probably fucking great on drugs. I don't quite understand why it wasn't the album ender. I dig Lot 105. Like, it's a cool song, but come on. Like,
amen. I'll just say that right now.
You
have
this
on
every album.
Me.
I was thinking Sam is going to just have a field day with this. Why isn't this? Doesn't this end the album?
1,000%.
You're
yeah.
totally right.
And like
totally
Lot,
right.
Lot 105 is like the Weedy Burton of Park Life. If you know The Cure's first album, you know what the Weedy Burton is. That's what Lot 4105 is. I like it, but it's not like it shouldn't be the album ender. But This Is a Low is really cool. It's super druggy. It's super like floaty. I love it. It's number 4.
When Jim initially said there's a clear number 1, I thought for sure that this is what he meant. And I thought, yeah, it's probably that for me too. But I bet once I listen to everything else, I'm going to put something else higher. Like, I forgot how much I really love this song. Or this song, yeah. I didn't realize I love this much. Something else is going to be number 1. And I had End of a Century at number 1, like I said. Like, that moment of the crowd freaking out at Reading was so forever in my heart. I'm like, it's got to be number 1. I don't care what anything is. But the more I listen to This Is a Low, and it does go on a little bit too long maybe, and I don't like the last note a little bit, but God, that's picking nits. Like, I'm sorry. It's such a great song. That is my number 1. It is beautiful and floaty. The bass, oh my God. It kind of reminds me, there's an early B-side of theirs called Inertia that I think was on There's No Other Way, which I'll have to send to you guys because it's beautiful. Mm. It was the first song, kind of like Elizabeth, My Dear, was the first song that John Squire and Ian Brown did after a long time apart. This was the first song that Graham and Damon played as a duo at the Brit Awards in 2009 after not having been on stage together for 9 years or so.
Wow.
But as much as I love my memory of seeing End of a Century at Reading, one of my favorite memories is being at the Fillmore, and Sam and maybe our roommate Pat went too. I'm sure you and I went together, and for whatever reason, it thinned out after the main set, and we rushed up right up front for the very end. And Damon starts to talk about the radio signals that go out over the English Channel or something like that. And we were so close. And I mean, Dan and Jim have heard me do this, like saying I didn't realize that he could hear me. It's probably not true, but I said something like, "Oh, like Mexican radio." And he looks at me and goes, "Yeah, exactly like Mexican radio." And I'm like, "I just got Damon to say Mexican radio. So where's my Stan Ridgway, residuals?"
Right.
But I think it was the last song they played that night, and it was just so amazing.
So good.
That's your number one.
That's my number one.
I love it. Nice. I love it. Dan, guess what? I go next. And Adam's correct. It's number one. This Is a Low is unbelievable. And I did not know when I started that it would be my top ranked. Same, Adam, I thought End of the Century, number one with, obviously. I got to tell you that the guitar solo isn't the greatest guitar solo ever, right? It's two really messy, beautiful guitars just going over each other. And I think it could take off more, but it doesn't, and that's okay. Because the rest of the song is absolutely perfect. I cannot believe we've made it this far, and I get to say it first, but we talk about the bass, we talk about the guitar licks, we talked about the unbelievable vocals. Nobody's talked about the drums once, and I never think about the drums.
Yeah.
When I respect every member of this band, but I never think about the drums. I said, "Oh my God, I got to listen to the drums this time through." I did that 5 times, guys. I never listened to the drums the entire time. I would forget because I'm just concentrating on other stuff. And I don't know why I'm bringing it up here. It doesn't have anything to do with this song, but I'm just saying we made it to number 15, and still we haven't talked about the drums. I think that it would be good on drugs. I assume it would be. And I can't wait to talk about Lot 105 because this should be the ender.
So just really quick, Jim, I felt the same. I listened to this album like probably 3-4 times, and I was like, what are the bass and drums doing? And they went unnoticed for me until I noticed that I hadn't noticed them, which is weird because the album starts off with the great bass in Girls and Boys. But I still can't recall of a drum performance and through the record, whereas like with the Stone Roses, like you can't help but notice how the drums play such a central part in the songs. Like Rennie is just, he's such a force. You can't, and this one I was like, I like you said, Jim, I went back and I'm like, oh, I've got to listen to the bass. I've got to listen to the drums. And I, like halfway through the record, I'm like, I'm supposed to be listening to the bass and the drums? And
well, on Bank Holiday, he destroys. Like he could be a punk rock drummer and I never think of him that way, but holy moly.
But it just doesn't raise to that level of consciousness, which is super weird. Like you said, which I guess maybe speaks to their craft, that it's just like so low. But like, I mean, you know, like the Smiths, like the first few records, it's the bass is right up front. Like you can't miss it. And the drums too, like you hear them, but this one is, it was odd for me because I know they're such accomplished players and it just like sneaks in.
And Dan.
Wow. I can only blow this with all your high rankings. I have This Is a Low at number 15.
No.
I'm totally kidding you guys. Jeez, come on. Come me some slack.
How have we never done that?
I love it. I love it.
Have we ever done that?
No, yeah, exactly. The fake new feature, guys. It's called fake ranking. No. This Is a Low I have at number 3. The song is gorgeous. It's totally gorgeous. You guys have said it all. The only thing nobody gave its due credit to is the guitar at the opening of this song. We've talked about the guitar at the end, good call on Radiohead-esque, and they're just gorgeous. But that opening acoustic strum, yeah, to your point, Jim, like, why play the chord when you can pick it? I love it.
Right.
There's the beginning one, and then there's that little, like, glitch, like, zip, zip, And then it kicks into like that that groove.
It's so Radiohead.
Oh my God. I'm imagining a room of drugged out people. It's sunrise. The sun is just coming up over the horizon. Everybody's had a long night, and somehow Damon's awake and he's singing this. That's how the music video opens in my head that I've never seen. It just, again, it totally sets a scene. It's gorgeous.
I love that.
Amazing.
And well said. I will add on, because it deserves to be added on, it is an absolute disgrace. What the fuck is Lot 105 doing at the end of this album? I don't mind it, but it's like, you don't go out on this and then end with like, and now it's jokey vaudeville time. Yeah, ridiculous.
It's a clown nose on the Mona Lisa is what I heard someone say about other things like it.
Perfect.
Not about this, but that's something that's been said before.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Totally this. And again, I love that they can be silly, but man, like... You know, and you know, sorry, Queen fans who are bread and butter, obviously based on our name alone. And it's funny that they would you know, reference Bohemian Rhapsody, the most epic song ever, and just have the last line of it. But it could have been somewhere else, and been totally fine. So I've got it down at number 14. What about you, Jim?
Oh my God, I have no idea what you're talking about with the last line of Bohemian Rhapsody, and I feel stupid right now.
Anyway, the wind blows, la 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 la.
Oh, gotcha. Thank you.
That's what it is.
I've got it at number 15, and I said this. It would be a great album opener. This is how the album should open with
Interesting.
This. And then it goes, and you know, da 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 da.
I kind of like
that.
And
it goes into Boys and Girls. Right from there.
Yes.
Right?
Sure.
Fuck.
This song is what I imagine. Made up fact, Dan. They play this song on tour before like the curtain drops
for
and
sure.
they start playing. You know,
for
it's
sure.
like it's the warm-up music.
They walk out,
know?
The crowd goes crazy. That's perfect.
Yeah. I maybe they did. I don't know.
Yeah, but, I think they might have actually.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, 15. If you want that, you could easily fast forward if you're in your car listening to a CD in your car, which I know doesn't happen anymore. You start with that, and it goes right into Boys and Girls.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
There you go.
Put it on repeat.
All right. What you got, Dan?
Yeah. I knew I was next. Damn it. Yeah. Number. This is the real number. I was going to end strong. This is the real number 15. Yeah. Fun, a little bit silly, horrific way to end an album, especially given what else they had. You know, if you don't have anything good at the end of the album, that's one thing. But when you've got, this is a low right before it.
15 other songs.
Tragic. Yeah. Like, you had all sorts of choices. Well, and then you cut Magic America and you're down to 15.
Oh,
anyways, Lot 105, number 15.
I have Lot 105 at number 13. Actually, it's above a few other songs. It sounds like a fun Madness goof, like, and I love Madness, and so like this kind of goofy shit I dig, but there's not much more to it than that. So 13.
All right.
It's like each of us have said to Adam at some point when we've been at a concert with him, there is a time and a place to be silly, and this is not it.
This is serious, Gimbal. Well, that was fun. Thanks to Molly for suggesting. We're gonna
guys
gonna get
into Tamale.
Some stats
I'm a
here.
Tamale. Tamale on Cinco de Mayo. Tamale.
Though we're drinking margaritas.
No? Yes.
And I think I did okay with not saying blah with an H, which is how everyone in England pronounces it. My entire life, I've literally corrected people and made them say it that way or spell it that way. But after you say it once, it just seems weird. So thanks for those hard R American. Pronunciations. Let's really quickly, everyone say what their lowest song was. Mine was Far Out.
London Loves.
Mine was Debt Collector.
Magic America.
Nice. Wow.
And our number one, mine was This Is a Low.
End of a Century.
This Is a Low.
And it seems to me, looks like we've made it to the end.
Yeah.
Nice.
So for fans of the hard rankings, that's what it was.
Well, I can give you the average, you know, the best song.
Just give us the low and the high on that. I'm curious.
This is a low?
Oh, that boy. Was you walked into that.
Sorry.
This is a low. Is the top ranked song and the lowest.
I'm sorry. To clarify, this is Jim. Jim keeps our stats for us, and between the four of us, on average, our number one song was "This Is a Low." And
our highest ranked. Yeah, exactly.
I need a top three though. We can't. We need a top three and a low.
Okay, top three.
Oh,
and
I can
lowest.
Give it to you. To the end.
Jim
number
can
three.
Give it to us.
To the end of number three, end of the century is number two, and This Is a Low is number one. I think that's correct.
Yeah.
There is only one of us that had those three ranked, one, two, and three, and that was me. So thank you very much.
It's always then, you. I think you're playing with the spreadsheet.
I don't know, guys. And, then, and check this out, Dan. The worst ranked song average was Debt Collector, and that was only one of us had it at number 16, and that was me. So
I'm telling you,
again.
You are Mr. Average, Jim. I'm telling
excellent.
You. It's impressive.
Jim's incredibly average.
Thanks again to Molly for suggesting that. And keep the suggestions coming. When we get to episode 20, if we all live that long, we'll do another request episode. And man, we have gotten so many incredible suggestions. This is going to be a really, really hard vote and decision when we get to it. So
now, Adam, is
that,
this... Well, sorry, one question what? On that. Is this what? Like Hall of Fame balloting where the stuff that didn't get selected last time, can it be resubmitted in this next round? Or are we starting clean?
It can, but what I did was, if you check our shared Google Doc, everything that none of us chose for our top five, I kind of put
wiped out
to pasture.
I like it. I like it.
So we don't have to read through a certain person's 30 suggestions that didn't. I mean, if Anita Baker wants to make a comeback, I'm totally down. But anyway, that was a fun one. On we go to episode number 11 for Spinal Tap fans. And the person choosing next week's record is Sam. What do we got?
For my next pick, we're staying in the UK. So that bodes well for Jim.
It does.
But we're traveling from London up to the rolling hills of Scotland. The band formed in 1981 and released their debut album in 1983. The band is
Big
what?
Country.
Go, Adam, go.
Oh, I think Dan might have got it.
What were
I
you going to say,
Big Country,
Adam?
But I don't think that's what he said.
What were you going to say, Adam?
I was going to say Aztec Camera, but I think Dan's right.
The band Big Country.
Oh yes. Shit!
The album The Crossing.
Oh,
we'll be listening to the U.S. shit. Version, which has a couple of songs switched from the U.K. version, but it's how I experienced it, and I do prefer that sequencing. It's a better album than most give it credit for, and it features the voice and guitar of Stuart Adamson, who is one of the unsung guitar heroes of the 80s. So I've got a playlist that I can share out with you. Jim, I will share with you the song order. Big Country's The Crossing.
Nice one. Wow. All right. Well, we'll see you guys hopefully in around 7 days. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thanks.
Please follow We Will Rank You at We Will Rank You Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and let us know how you would rank this week's tunes. Sam writes about music on the web at yourolderbrother.com. You can find Adam's music page at You're Doing Great, that's YERDOIN. Please subscribe, rank, and review our show at your favorite pod place, and send us a note with suggestions and flattery to wewillrankyoupod@gmail.com.